Today is April 25th, 2018, and this is episode number 459 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm making plans for January.
Well, that's exciting.
It is, right?
It's totally exciting. And wait a second. January, who are you and where's Brian Chaffin? Because Brian never plans that far in advance.
Well, to be fair, someone else has instigated it. Let's just say there's going to be a band.
Well, let's just say I approve of this instigation.
Excellent. I appreciate that. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note over on Facebook at Facebook.com/groups/Context Machine. You could probably even like Google Apple Context Machine Facebook. Probably find it. Or look at the show notes.
I wonder. Hold on. I'm going to Google it right now. Apple Context.
Narration is important when you're making sausage.
Facebook. Yeah, see. No, it just comes with all kinds of links to us, but Facebook isn't one of them.
Really?
Yeah. So boo.
Did you do Context Machine Facebook or Apple Context Machine?
Let me just try Context Machine because you know sausage.
Yeah.
No. Lame.
Huh. All right. Well, don't try that. And as a matter of fact, you can look in the show notes, find a link to the Facebook group, or, you know, type it out yourself, /group/Context Machine. Definitely appreciate the conversation over there. We appreciate it kindly.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. You guys are great.
Indeed. Indeed, indeed. So let's see. We do have three topics. We've been trying to do that thing badly. We've been not successfully trying to do that thing where we tell people what we're going to talk about.
Well, sometimes we tell them, sometimes we don't. This is how we're keeping mystery in the relationship.
That's right. So topic one is who'd have thunk Amazon is the cyberpunk king. Topic two, Tim's FU date. You didn't think I'd actually say it, did you?
No.
Jeff was safely assuming that our inside note for the topic would stay inside. And topic three would be Gray Shift, whatever the heck those people are called.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And this is how you keep mystery in our relationship.
All right. Well, let's start at the top, because you were telling me about a thing. I guess I missed a story roll by because you wrote it up, right?
The Amazon cyberpunk king thing, right?
Yes. The robot.
Okay. So here's the deal. Amazon has a personal robot project called Vesta that they've been working on for a while, and they've really started ramping up this year, hiring very specialized engineers for different robotic elements of what this robot will include. And the plan is they want to ship to consumers this personal robot in 2019. So the idea, as it stands right now, is that the robot would essentially be a mobile Echo with added sensors. So it'll have cameras and microphones, infrared sensors, things like that. So it can hang out with you wherever you are in your house, unless you know how to defeat Daleks and you have stairs. Can you believe it took all the way until like the second or third season in the reboot of Doctor Who, or when it came back, before they finally addressed Daleks and stairs?
Yeah, I can believe because it was always a low budget show.
Yeah, up until then. So yeah. Anyhow, so if you live in a Dalek proof house, this little robot won't be able to follow you up and down the stairs, but it can tag along wherever you're going. It can respond to your A-Lady commands just like a stationary Echo device would. And then when you aren't home, it can act like a little sentry for you. So it can watch for motion that shouldn't be happening. Like if someone comes in the house, you can use it to remotely monitor things that are happening in your house. And it will be your own little personal Amazon A-Lady robot just hopping from room to room with you.
Cataloging all your belongings.
Well, of course, and everything you say and everything.
Okay. Do you remember that time? Do you remember that time I was wrong? You probably don't. I wouldn't blame you.
Well, it's, hold on. Let me get the book out. I have to flip back some pages.
Well, here's another entry for you. When Amazon decided to release its phone in particular, like I was fine. I know. I guess it really started with the tablets that were not Kindle readers. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, who does this company think it is with delusions of, you know, being a tech product company? And I just thought it was just ridiculous, just completely and utterly ridiculous. And in many ways, it is still ridiculous to me, but not to lots of people. And I was clearly wrong. With Alexa in particular, you know, I think what it is, I think that the Fire tablets were essentially a flop. I mean, they never sold in large numbers, but they didn't sell in.
They sold well enough.
Maybe
well
enough to keep making them. But I think that the failure of that probably resulted in the shift, because Jeff Bezos is, you know, intensely flexible. Mm-hmm. You know, very, very able to turn on a dime, very able to look at new things. He's not wedded to anything. I think, you know, he's gonna look for a good idea, and he's gonna grab it no matter what. And with Alexa now, this company is absolutely a tech giant, and I was wrong completely to dismiss Amazon as a real tech player. And it's like Amazon, Google, Apple and Microsoft is a semi-distant fourth, or the big tech giant companies.
Yeah, they've kind of siloed themselves to a degree with the whole tech thing. We have Amazon for our smart home automation and voice interaction. We have Google for finding everything. And then we have Apple for our health and mobile communication.
Apple for health and mobile communication?
Apple is in the beginning of owning the health data space.
Yeah, that's true, but I think that Apple is also still a huge player in the content creation business, and Apple has an enormous business in the desktop and mobile computing space too, not counting iOS. And the Mac is still a very big deal. Yes. So I don't think Apple is pigeonholing itself or siloing in just those two categories that you came up with.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't want to put it on too thick. Because otherwise it would have been, so we have Google for search, we have Amazon for voice control and smart home tech,
well,
and
yeah,
we have Google, Apple for everything else.
Google is doing more than search, too. Google's doing a
you're
lot
really messing up my silos, man.
I know, because your silos suck. And this
just I just want to point out you were wrong about Amazon and technology.
Okay, that's a fair point. Are you still throwing that against me?
What time is it? Yep.
But yeah, I think the silos are whatever. They
have silos.
They do have silos. I think they're broader than what you're describing, but they do have silos. And that's definitely not the point. The point is that Amazon has become this big player. And here's the thing is, you were telling me about this robot before, pre-show, because again, mm-hmm. I missed your article. I was thinking to myself, like, you know, of all the sort of science fiction-y stuff that we've had, all the cyberpunk fears about corporate intrusions into our life and technology becoming, you know, omnipresent in a creepy, horrific way. Like, who'd have thunk that Amazon would end up being the king there? Like, I think it's easy to say that 2 years ago, if someone had said, who do you think is going to be the intrusive, creepy cyberpunk king? We would probably have come up with Google first,
Google or Facebook.
Maybe Facebook. Yeah. Google first for sure, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that it's Amazon sort of pushing the envelope in this creepy, horrid way of being in our homes and watching us. I mean, like this robot that you're describing just sounds horrific to me. I don't want that. I don't trust Amazon to have that kind of access to my life at all. I mean, like all the other things that we like the being able to open my front door. I don't trust Amazon with that. I don't trust Amazon to have cameras in my home. I don't trust Amazon to have microphones in my home.
So if you're going to trust Amazon to open your front door, you have to trust them to have a camera in your home as well.
Right.
Yeah. Cause it's just part of the package. And then, yeah, they have ears in our home.
I certainly don't want them to have a robot that's going to follow me around watching everything that I'm doing, because they will be using that data to profile you and figure out the things that you need. And that's just creepy to me. I do not want that.
So I want to have a command when I have one of these rolling around my house, because you know I'm going to want to test it, even if I don't like have one all the time. I want to be able to say, "Hey, lady, go to bed," you know, like you would do with a dog. Mm-hmm. And then wherever its charging base is, I'll put it like in the corner of my office where I'm not doing stuff when I'm just kind of like kicking back at home. And so then this thing has to go and park itself in the other room where it's not watching.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to live my life that way, man. I don't need a company figuring out the crap that I need.
I'm kind of concerned about what happens when I get up in the morning, you know, just climb out of bed and go to the bathroom to brush my teeth before I start writing. And then like 10 minutes later, I'm getting these ads from Amazon about, hey, time for you to buy new underwear, stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't need Amazon to have that footage. I don't need Amazon to have those recordings. I don't need Amazon to have this information. I do not want this. And I hope that the marketplace rejects this particular product. I suspect the marketplace is going to largely reject the door opening stuff. I also don't think the marketplace is going to be keen on having stuff delivered to your car. I don't really think that's going to be a thing. I could be wrong.
I think you may be wrong on the car thing, because there's a lot of people that they're at work and they're like, oh, I'm just going to order this whatever on my phone. And they live in areas where they get same day delivery. So they can just have, they can sit there at their office and order stuff, when they go down to their car at the end of the day, there's like three boxes. And they've just got stuff.
Okay, and, that's a possibility. It's a possibility.
And there's also a perceived extra level of safety or trust in there, because it's not Amazon that has the virtual keys to unlock your car. It's OnStar or Volvo on call. So it's a different company that gets to unlock the car. And yeah, for some people that might be a thing, but now that I'm saying this,
makes it worse. It's just too many. I don't know, man.
People are going to go for this.
I don't think it's so much a trust issue as I just don't really think that there's going to be a whole lot of demand of what it can do. Because I agree with you that people, very few people are as creeped out and disgusted by this as me. I'm well outside the bell curve. I'm the oddball, but I just, I don't think that people are like, man, gosh, if I could only have something delivered to my car today, I don't really think that's a thing. And I don't think that people are going to shift their thinking into thinking that way.
I think a lot of people will. I
shift their mindset.
It's just one of those things where if you're in an area where car deliveries are available and you can just sit there and remember the stuff that you forgot to order, like a present for someone, you're going to an event tonight and you forgot to get a present, you can order it, have it delivered to your car wrapped. And you're talking with friends and like, oh, there's this cool thing. Oh, I want to play with that. And you just order it and it's waiting for you in your car. People totally dig instant gratification.
Yeah, they do. I just don't think they're going to, but I think it's the mind shift that needs to shift to make that, to turn that into demand. And that's what I doubt is going to happen. I
will see.
Could certainly be wrong. We will absolutely see. As well as Amazon has done, Amazon has also had a bunch of failures, and I would include the Fire Phone first among those.
Oh, absolutely.
First among that list. And there have been others too. So it's not like Amazon can do no wrong.
Right. But they're willing to try stuff even though it may fail.
Yeah, for sure. And you got to give him a lot of credit for that. And like I said, he Jeff Bezos doesn't double down on stupid, and he's not afraid to shift. I've got a lot of respect for him as a businessman. I don't like what his main business model is doing to the merchant glass. And I don't like what it's doing to quality. But he's really good at doing it, and he's really good at almost everything he sets his mind to. And if it doesn't work, he moves on. So, yeah, respect.
So I have a question for you now. We've already established that you have no interest in an Amazon robot roaming around your place. If Apple made a robot, would you be interested in having that roam around your place?
Yeah, I would be, because, I mean, depending on what Apple said, what Apple was going to do with it. And of course, this also depends on when and what Apple's doing at that time. But with the company's stated priority of privacy, I would trust Apple's implementation of whatever it said it was going to do. So, yeah, I don't know that I would particularly want it or need it. Again, that kind of depends on what it actually did.
Yeah, and my guess is that anything these companies are going to release in the next year or so are going to be, relatively speaking, rudimentary. That they'll be like Echoes on Wheels, essentially. And yeah, I'd be surprised if Apple
were Echoes able on to wheels release. That are filming and listening and watching and following. But go ahead.
Mostly pedantic. So I think that designing something like this is pretty complex, and not even Apple is going to come out the chute with their very first robotic offering where it's going to be really sophisticated, where it has arms and hands, and it's, I just don't see that happening yet.
No, probably not. And Apple may never enter the consumer robotic space. I think that Apple is quietly becoming a huge player in the industrial robotics side of things, but for, on the manufacturing side. And I'm not just talking about Liam and Daisy. I'm talking about everything that they're doing in the on the production side, the manufacturing side. But that doesn't mean that Apple's going to enter the consumer space. They could. If they, you know, we've got Phil Schiller's statement that Apple wants to be at the center of where we live our lives. And if they can figure, if robots somehow figure into that, Apple could certainly enter the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they totally could. Okay, so if you want to see some crazy stuff with industrial robotics, in the article I wrote about Amazon Vesta project, I included a YouTube video showing inside Amazon's warehouses where they have robots that are moving the various inventory shelves around all the time. And then these crazy big robot arms that are like stationary, but can sit there and sort through stuff and load stuff into packages.
Okay.
It's pretty impressive what they're doing today.
Sure.
So anyhow, since Apple's not going to give us unfettered access to their robotic production facilities, at least yet, you can get an idea of what's happening today with Amazon by checking that out.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I don't know. Love to hear what people think. Head over to Facebook, facebook.com/group/contextmachine. Let us know what you think. Let us know if I'd love to hear other people's reactions. Again, I know I'm outside the bell curve. I know that I'm a weirdo. And I'm very interested in what other people have to say about this, because I want to Chaffin's razor, right? I want to understand like if you're okay with this, you're like crazy in my book, and I want to understand why. I want to understand my missing information.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see if people are interested in having personal robots like this in their homes and what features they would like to see in these.
Sure. Sure. Now our audience may self-select a little bit towards people who are disinclined towards this thing simply because I into a, probably to a lesser extent you, but I, you know, fun with the mouth and rant and freak out about this stuff all the time. So our audience may be a little self-selecting towards people who are also disinclined, but I want to hear, especially if you disagree, especially if you think I'm the crazy one and that I'm the idiot. I want to hear.
Yeah. And now that I'm thinking about this, I'm just visualizing being on vacation somewhere and I get some sort of motion alert from one of the other smart home devices that I have in my place. And so then I pull up my iPhone and say, hey, A lady, or hey, S lady, whichever robot happens to be rolling around, go check the living room for me. And this little thing trundles off of its charging base, rolls into the living room and looks around, and it's giving me video in real time of what's happening.
Well, why wouldn't you just have camera set up if you want to do that?
I already do.
Well, then.
Because then it's cool.
No, what would actually be cool is to be able to get the alert. And then, by the time you send the robot through, it could be too late, or, you know, the bad guy can hear the robot sound and hide or
kick leave it over
or kick it over or whatever.
Or steal it. But you're completely missing the point. It's cool. and actually I've already got
my bad
camera set up so that, you can't go through my place without being caught on at least one camera and probably two cameras at almost any given time.
That's just fantastic.
Yeah. So of course I do the risky business dance in the hall so that it'll be on camera.
Shun tun 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 tun.
So you've seen the video.
Shun tun 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 tun.
Yeah, I really do take those old records off the shelf.
Yeah, well, you know, as you do. As you do. All right. Let's see here. We have Tim's FU date. That's how I saw it.
That's, you're just entertaining me, so thank you.
You're welcome, I think. All right. So what I'm talking about is Tim Cook was invited to and attended the Trump administration's first state dinner. This, of course, being after Trump said during the campaign that, you know, shouldn't be any state dinners.
Well, in his defense, he also said that he thought it was ridiculous that a president would be out playing golf and that he was going to be working.
Right, right, right. Let's just not even jump down that particular rabbit hole because it's deep and dark and full of vile and bile. Anyway, so first date dinner, and it was to honor President de Macron and his wife who were visiting from home.
And people still listen to this show.
And but Tim Cook was invited and showed up, and he brought with him Lisa Jackson, Vice President of Environment. God, what's her full title again? She has a title of things. Her title is Looking Sausage.
I don't think sausage is in her title.
Environment, Policy, and Social Initiatives. That's Lisa Jackson. And Lisa Jackson used to be head of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. And the Trump administration is you know, rabid about eliminating as many environmental protections and regulations as possible.
Yeah, the latest is limiting how what types of science and how much scientific research can be done for EPA.
Which is bat guano insane.
Oh, man.
It is. Okay. But in any event, I looked at, actually, please tell everybody what you saw when you saw the, because I included the image. I included Bloomberg's tweet for this.
Oh, yeah. When I saw that, I figured it was a pretty rough dinner because on the left, you have this nice looking couple walking in, and on the right, they're like way old and kind of run down. So I figured that must have been a pretty rough evening.
Before and after?
Yeah, before and after.
Yeah, and the nice looking couple would be Tim Cook and Lisa Jackson, and then the older couple would be Henry Kissinger and I don't know
the and his date.
Who's with him? His date, yeah. I don't know if that's his wife. I don't know who that is. And be that as it may. Yeah, don't know who that is. What struck me, so one of the interesting things about this dinner, I mean, this dinner, you know, everything that the Trump administration, anything that most administrations do has some politics involved, but I think that's been amped up a lot under the Trump administration. And there were no Democratic congressmen invited to the state dinner, and that breaks with, you know, all tradition. You invite the opposing party to your state dinners. There was a Democratic governor there, Democratic governor of Louisiana, but he was the only Democratic politician who was invited. Tim Cook is probably a Democrat.
I'm guessing.
We don't know that for sure. He certainly has very, he's got very, when it comes to taxation policy in particular, he's got very conservative ideas that resonate with conservatives at the very least. So not positive he's a Democrat, but I think he certainly has the reputation of being towards the liberal side, except for taxation. And he brings with him Lisa Jackson as his plus one, because there's no way she was invited. No way she was invited.
I agree. There's no way.
And I just really thought of that as a sort of FU appearance by Tim, or making a statement, saying that Apple cares about the environment.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that was a pretty clever move on Tim's part.
Well, you know, I wonder if it was like, I mean, was it an FU move? And that's really kind of what I wanted to talk about. Was it, you know, was it a middle finger statement, or was it more like more of a practical thing where, like, we care about this stuff. You know, we're in business and we care about this stuff. Or was it, golly, was it just coincidence?
There was no coincidence there.
Yeah. Apple, everything Tim does is very carefully.
Yeah, Tim was making a statement. By extension, Apple was making a statement. And whether that statement was, these are the principles we have and these are the things we believe in, or if it was F you, either way, they were making a statement.
And speaking of statements, one of the notable, all of the administration officials who are currently getting bad press are, or at least in the middle of controversy. Oh, that doesn't sound right either, because no one would be there. But Scott Pruitt and some other people, actually, let me look at Bloomberg covered all this. Bloomberg said, let me see here, Scott Pruitt, who is the current administrator of the EPA and the guy who's doing his darndest to roll back things and
to remove science from scientific research.
Yep. Yep. He wasn't there, but Lisa Jackson was. Rain Zinke, who is also getting a lot of negative press for some of his spendthrift ways. Nikki Haley, who's in trouble for politics involving Russia. None of these people were there. And but there was Lisa Jackson. So I don't know. It's kind of. Oh, and of course, also Lisa Jackson was a minister. Not only, of course, was she the head of the EPA? She was the head of the EPA under Obama, which whom Trump just, you know, seems to hate and loathe. So yeah, it really felt like an FU statement to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. And
is that smart? Is that dangerous? Is that going to harm Apple?
I don't think
probably it's going
to harm Apple.
I don't know that it was necessarily smart. I don't know that it's necessarily going to help Apple. I kind of, you know, Tim has never struck me as a petty man. This really may have been much less FU and much more. I think it's important that we make a statement, and you know that it may have been much more of a value statement than an FU statement.
It may very well have been, but I still want there to be a little FU in it.
Yeah,
that's just fun.
All right. Well, that's that. It's kind of interesting. We don't really know what they talked about. We don't know where they were sat. We don't know who they spoke with. Although I did see a reference to Tim Cook having a conversation with President Trump. I'm not sure if that's actually the case.
That's happening today or happened today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was just something that was scheduled.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Be interesting to see what comes out of that. I would imagine it's about it's probably more about the industry and whatnot. Although,
well,
I can't. You know, Tim Cook is so smart. I can't imagine he's going to bother actively lobbying for any kind of environmental efforts, because it's just a wasted opportunity.
Yeah,
falling on deaf ears and whatnot.
Well, Trump tweeted this morning, looking forward to my meeting with Tim Cook of Apple. We will be talking about many things, including how the U.S. has been treated unfairly for many years by many countries on trade. So apparently they were going to talk about many things.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no, I mean, that's definitely that is a political spin. So there's, you know, it's not to say that that's necessarily what they're actually going to talk about. Hard to tell.
Yeah. Well, even with a pre-planned agenda, you never know what's really going to end up being discussed.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
By the way, Rupert Murdoch was there too. I'd forgotten that he had married Jerry Hall.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Forgotten that he married Jerry Hall. She is just good.
Yeah, I'm still kind of stuck on the before and after picture.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
It's pretty funny. Alrighty. Well, that's that. Let's see here. What do we have here? Gray shift. And the gray key box that was left with its privates hanging out. In the wind. All right, so here's the story on this. Gray shift, they make these boxes that'll crack open an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
By brute forcing passwords, which we don't know how they're doing that, because that shouldn't be possible.
Right. But they're doing it, and it takes them I guess no more than 3 days.
No, I think it's three. So it's 3 hours for four digits, up to 3 hours for four digits.
Well, no, that's theoretical from what the number of combinations are and what the presumed hardware specs are. What they were saying is that it's actually a lot slower with this box. So it can take a day or so.
But it can take a week for, my understanding was a week for a six-digit password.
Well, they're claiming, well, maybe they aren't specifying how long the passwords are, but they're saying up to 3 days and they're in your phone.
Right. So these devices are sold only to law enforcement. There are supposedly two versions of this box. Mm-hmm. $15,000 box that once set up can only operate within the network where it was set up.
Mm-hmm.
And then a $30,000 version of the box that can basically be run anywhere.
Right. And it's small enough that you can really toss it in a pocket if you want.
Yeah, maybe a pretty big pocket.
Yeah, well, cargo pants are really popular in some circles.
That's true, especially in police circles.
Yeah, those big pockets come in handy. You know, like if you're carrying around a gray key.
Like a gray key, right. And that's the name of the box is called the Gray Key. The company is called Gray Shift.
Mm-hmm.
And Motherboard learned about an attempt to extort money from Gray Shift by a couple of, or we actually don't know how many people, by some people who found a box that was set up in such a way that it exposed some data to hackers, to these people. And they sent a ransom note to Gray Shift demanding money.
I hope they sent it on a locked iPhone.
I don't know how they sent it, but it was an image. It said, "Dear Mr. Miles, this is addressed to you and any other people interested in keeping Gray Key product secure and not available to the wide public." The wide public. "We are, quote unquote, business group looking forward to bring into your attention the fact that we have obtained the source code for your product Gray Key and would appreciate any donation above 2 bitcoins sent to an address if you consider that keeping this information secure is crucial." So hopefully English is the second language.
This interpretive reading brought to you by Brian Chapman. Brian Chapman, ladies and gentlemen, Brian Chapman.
So, all right. So first of all, they're asking for 2 bitcoins.
Mm-hmm.
But they would appreciate any donation above 2 bitcoins. So like, can you just imagine the conversation? Well, you know, I really think we should send them 4.
because they seem like really nice people.
Yeah. Anyway, that's like,
well, I'm assuming like, English is a second language. However, if I were to construct a ransom message of this sort, I would probably intentionally do something like this so that it makes it a little harder, hopefully, for someone to figure out that I had created such a message. And now okay. that I've said this, I'm screwed and I'm not going to get my Bitcoin, and great.
Great. You've really screwed the pooch here. But the other thing you would probably do is ask for some real money. These people are asking for, okay, at the time that they did this, two Bitcoins was worth about $16,500, or little more than the price of the cheap, of one single cheap gray key.
Seriously, that's just weird. Why would you, is this like Austin Powers?
Yeah, right?
I demand
$1 million.
$1 million.
Nothing to me. I mean, like, nothing says I know that what I have isn't worth very much than asking for not very much.
Yeah, that doesn't put you in a good position for negotiating your ransom amount.
Yeah, it's
but they did leave it open ended. You could donate two Bitcoin or more.
Right, or more. Absolutely more or more if you, you know, whatever you feel is appropriate. It's just amateurs. So here's the thing about all of this, though, besides mocking the would-be extortionists, mm-hmm. because they have not been paid. According to Motherboard, the Bitcoin address that they supplied for the two or more Bitcoins to be sent, did not get two or more Bitcoins. So Grayshift didn't reward the extortionist by paying off the extortion. And Grayshift also, yes?
Well, I'm thinking that the people that got a hold of this sample code, or code snippet, excuse me, they could probably make more than two Bitcoin selling that to other people that really want the code.
Well, plus they're going to do that. They would do that.
Right. So
as a matter of fact, it's another thing that actually suggests, I mean, that suggests they knew that what they had wasn't worth anything, because they could have in fact made a lot more selling it to, state actors and criminal organizations.
Or maybe they're really noobs.
Or they could just be noobs. That's true. So what Grayshift said is that the only thing that was found essentially UI code, and that was what was exposed, and they blamed it on a customer, as if that made it all right. Actually, let me read their statement. During this time, someone accessed the HTML/JavaScript that makes up our UI. No sensitive IP or data was exposed, as the gray key was being validation tested at the time. We have since implemented changes to help our customers prevent unauthorized access.
Maybe they should have implemented that before selling these boxes. Just a hunch.
Right. Right. Maybe if they're going to sell something that is going to be set up by consumers, i.e. police in this case, mm-hmm. They could have made it some kind of hardened device. Maybe. And this is the problem. This is where I get my backup. This is the thing. People that think that law enforcement should have a back door are wrong, because a back door that exists, and that includes cracks like this device. Mm-hmm. They will be mishandled eventually. It is only a matter of time. And in this case, it wasn't very much time at all.
No, these have been shipping as of December.
Right. And we already have one mishandled. And Motherboard found another one I'm looking.
Your boat.
Oh, it looks like I have the wrong
Ensign
link in my article. There's a server. There is a server. Yeah, I've got the wrong URL. That's great. Anyway, there's a server search engine. And they used that, and they found another gray box that was similarly misconfigured.
That's awesome.
And this was after all this had happened.
That so, is I mean, absolutely
like, the point,
awesome.
Yeah, the point is that people mishandle these things. Like, there is a 100% chance that these $30,000, some of these $30,000 boxes are going to be stolen or quote unquote misplaced.
Oh yeah.
Or, you know, quote unquote lost.
Yep.
100% chance.
And they will get, even if they're not used to hack phones, they will be reverse engineered.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, they will wind up in the hands of criminal organizations, and they will wind up in the hands of state actors, including state actors that are authoritarian and repressive, not to mention opposed to our interests. And it is, I mean, it is inevitable. It's just so frustrating. I mean, products like this.
Do you remember when the San Bernardino brouhaha was happening? Mm-hmm. And we had DOJ officials. We had James Comey from the FBI. They were all saying, look, you know, when we have these back doors, they will be kept safe. They will be used only for intended.
Yeah, we'll leave them in the hands of the company.
And when
that was one of the things that James Comey was arguing.
Yeah, and when
only Apple would have the FBI OS.
Right. And people were saying, so there, that proves that this will be safe. And Apple was saying, no, look, if we make it, eventually it's going to leak. When people make these sorts of tools, they leak, period.
Right.
And I remember the DOJ just shooting that down, saying, no, that's not a problem. And yet we have this, and we have the Cellebrite leak, and Cellebrite being the big company out of Israel that hacks into devices for government agencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we already have demonstrable evidence that this stuff leaks.
Yes. And this is why these things shouldn't exist. And, you know, and I say that, and I am still very cognizant that law enforcement has very legitimate, very necessary reasons for wanting to get into a lot of devices. I do think they become a crutch. I do think that, that there are aspects of modern law enforcement that look at being able to, you know, eavesdrop on our data and be able to mass collect data and sift through it looking for things that they don't like. Being able to get into our devices becomes a bit of a crutch. And I also understand that crutch exists because it does actually make things a lot easier for them. And I get all that. But there is a legitimate and lawful need to be able to get into devices. And I understand why the gray key is so so desirable by these folks, but it is the proof in the pudding. It is the literal proof in the pudding that backdoors and hacks created and provided, theoretically at least, to only law enforcement will wind up in the hands of other people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's of course only assuming that Grayshift isn't also dealing out their own backdoor. Who knows who else they're selling them to? They could be selling them to China. They could be selling them to Myanmar. They could be selling them to Erdogan over in Turkey, to Putin.
Yes. And yeah, we don't know who's selling what to whom.
Right.
Yeah.
Scary stuff, annoying stuff, frustrating stuff. And by the way, I sort of mentioned this, but like Grayshift blame this on a customer as if that makes it okay. That's actually part of the problem.
Yeah, that tells me Grayshift didn't do their job very well because they didn't train their customer how to properly secure the device.
Yes. And the fact that it is possible for a customer to misconfigure this is a huge problem. And they say that they made it to help our customers prevent unauthorized access. Doesn't mean that to, you know, that's a far cry from, you know, stopping or helping our customers stop unauthorized access.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah. The whole thing is just sketchy as can be. By the way, I bet you that these devices cost them less than $500 to make.
I would assume so, because
I'd be flabbergasted if they could spend more than $500 making it.
Yeah, my guess is that they aren't using custom design and fabricated chips. So they, you know, whatever chips they're using, we could go buy. And then it's all about the code that they wrote.
Yeah.
But that doesn't diminish the value of the code itself because, I mean,
no, absolutely.
That takes a lot of money and a lot of resources to make.
They're getting this money. They're getting this money for doing this job. So, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, from a, you know, capitalist standpoint, more power to them. I wasn't offering that as condemnation, offering the cost as condemnation. It's more like, you know, wow, think about that.
Yeah. No, and I was just adding a little color because, you know, color.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So there you have it. Grayshift, Graykey.
Yeah. Well, I'm not feeling any more secure about these devices.
No, I'm not either.
Yeah.
I'm not either. It's an upsetting time right now, eh?
Boy, howdy. Yeah.
All right. On that note, I think...
I was reading your mind. Anyhow, and that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com, and thanks for listening.
Indeed, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly, the bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.